Thank you, sir. With that, I entertain a motion to approve the remainder of the consent calendar.
The remainder of the consent agenda with the amendments.
Second.
Been moved by Mr. Asajian, seconded by Mr. Gibson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. I need a motion to approve the presentations.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. And with that, Dory Duke or Tammy?
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, I'm Tammy Douglas-Schott, Human Resources. We have several service awards to give today, and we're happy to be here to assist the board in your tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized by the board are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. So we've got 25-year service awards today and 30-year service awards. So if it's okay with the board, we'll start with the 25-year service awards. And Heather Gunderlach and Robin Mason are here to help me today to hand out awards and take pictures. So we'll call your name, come up and get your 25-year service award, and the board can congratulate you. And then if the department head and the employee want to say just a few words, that will be fine, and then we'll take a picture at the end. Then we'll move to the 30-year service award. So let's get started with the 25s. And the first person that we'd like to honor today is Lenore Gallagher of the Probation Department for 25 years of service.
To say. Although I would like to thank the department for hiring me when I was 10 years old.
You're on probation?
Members of the board, Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. I want to thank Lenore for her 25 years of service. Lenore currently is working as our court officer in juveniles, which is a very difficult job helping out in the juvenile court, and I think it's a testimony to her ability and her skill as a juvenile court officer that we actually have the juvenile presiding judge, Judge Garrett, here today. The juvenile district attorney is also here, so we work as a real team there in court, and Lenore really has been a real leader in that for the probation department and working with the court, so thank you, Lenore.
Thank you.
Patterson, did you have a chance?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to take, well, let's see, we're going to do a photo op,
first?
I guess.
Okay, we do
so
it.
Then I'll see.
Get your chief in here.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. During my first term for 4 years, I held my office hours in Atascadero in the North County Probation Office, and at the time, Lenore was the North County Supervising Officer, and so I had an opportunity to work with her and the officers in the North County office quite a bit, and I just wanted to mention that in addition to supervising that office, Lenore also served on the North County Community Link Board is a liaison between probation and the many services that the link provides to families in the North County. She and that board is very effective in providing services, and she was very much a part of that effort, and I wanted to thank her for that.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'd like to honor Barbara Feemeister of the Probation Department as well.
Thank you.
Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. Barb is our senior account clerk who oversees all our bills that come into the probation department, and she's actually in charge of paying the bills. And I cannot tell you how much money she has saved the taxpayers of San Luis Obispo County by scrutinizing those bills. If we get overcharged, she's quick to call the company and say, this isn't right. She goes over every bill again and checks the addition, does not trust the vendor's addition. but Barb is truly an asset to the department, but not only to the but also to the county of San Luis Obispo and the taxpayers. Thank you, Barb.
Next, we'd like to honor Ronald Walraven of the Public Works Department.
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Department. Actually, both of the employees being recognized by your board today from Public Works originally started in the roads crews. Ron started around 1984. Has progressively worked himself up through the public works workers, the lead worker position, section supervisor position. Several years ago, he was promoted to the section supervisor, and last year, Ron transferred over to the North County Road Yard, picking up some very important responsibilities up in North County, working well with the individuals up there, the crews that are up there, and continuing to provide good leadership in the North County on the road crews. One of the big challenges, of course, that we have right now is recognizing the budget situation. Ron's crew is down significantly, about 10%. And certainly it's a testament to his leadership that, they continue to get out there, work very hard. I think one of the biggest challenges that they have is their own expectations of the job that they're doing in entire financial times. Ron's also an avid outdoorsman, fisherman, likes to do fly fishing up in the mountains. And I certainly appreciate all of his hard work for our public roads.
And our last 25-year service award employee to honor today is Scott Wetmore, also of the Public Works Department.
Thanks. Chairman Meacham, Pablo Oginga, Public Works Director. Scott, like Ron, started in the mid-1980s on our roads crew, also worked up to section supervisor and foreman positions of both trees, bridges, and section 3, has had quite a good array of experience on the roads crew. Several years ago, Scott was promoted into the office as a civil engineering technician, worked within the traffic and transportation division for several years, including fleet management, but with also recent cutbacks and the need in order to reduce office engineering of transportation within the department, Scott's talents and his flexibility has seen him move it out into the field. He's been doing inspections on the Nacimiento pipeline and assistant resident engineer on a number of construction projects, and both his diversity of talents and years of experience are sincerely appreciated. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. It's been a great journey.
Not over yet. And next we'll go to the 30-year service awards, and I think the board has resolutions to read on those. And the first employee is Ingrid Warren of the General Services Agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution recognizing Ingrid Warren for 30 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo. Whereas Associate Real Property Agent Ingrid Warren has served San Luis Obispo County for 30 years of outstanding service, and whereas Ingrid began her career in San Luis Obispo County in 1980, as an appraiser aide for the assessor and quickly promoted to the level of appraiser 3, and whereas Ingrid joined Real Property Services as part of General Services on May 2, 1999, and whereas Ingrid has been an exemplary employee and continues to focus on the successful conclusion of real property negotiations and sets the work ethic standard by her outstanding example, and whereas the hallmarks of her career are her perseverance and desire to serve the public with a reputation as the go-to person for leasing office space throughout the county, and whereas Ingrid was instrumental in the successful conclusion of many property procurements, including an 80-acre donation in Templeton for the Liz Duvenek Memorial Park, a 30-acre donation of the Napomo Mesa for the Jack Reddy Park, and an 100-acre purchase in Napomo adjacent to the historic Dana Adobe. Not listed, but I want to add these before I conclude the resolution. Ingrid has also been involved in procuring property for a new fire station out in California Valley, as well as Creston. And being from a North County, North Coast ranching family, during an agriculture awareness week here in the county, Ingrid brought a new calf in, 2 weeks old, named Lucky, to showcase agriculture in San Luis Obispo County, and made the general services staff here in the government center very nervous because she created this two-year-old calf in to the board chambers, and I want to thank her for that. So she brought life to agriculture here and put it on display, and so thank you, Ingrid. And that calf is, what, a couple of years old now and has become a pet of the family. So. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Ingrid Warren be and hereby is commended for her 30 years of dedicated and conscientious service, together with our sincere thanks for a job well done.
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, I'm Katie Perez with the General Services Agency, and I'm here to commend Ingrid and thank her for her 30 years of services. She has been a real asset to us and keeps us smiling and laughing and moving forward. And without her, we couldn't have accomplished some of these great transactions we've done that benefit the people and the county. So with that, I want to thank you, Ingrid. I hope you have many more years with us.
Thank you very much. Chairperson Meacham and members of the board, thank you for taking the time to acknowledge the service and accomplishments of county employees. In the 30 years that I've been working for the county, I've seen many downturns in the economy. It's those times that I am reminded of the fable of the ant and the grasshopper. The grasshopper plays all summer while the ant works hard. County employees work hard. And when winter comes, the grasshopper has nothing to eat. And it turns to the ant and wants something. I'm reminded of that daily. I want to tell you that I enjoy my work and I'm thankful and appreciate all my coworkers, and thank my husband for putting up with me for the 30 years and bringing Lucky into the government center. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. This resolution recognizing Eric Bird for 30 years of service for the children and families as a therapist for the county of San Luis Obispo. Whereas Eric began working at Drug and Alcohol Services as a contract employee in 1977 and was hired as a mental health therapist in 1980, working for the department as a case manager for children placed out of their family home in the county and throughout the state of California. Eric left mental health to work as a court mediator from 1989 to 1994. He returned to mental health in 1994, where he was instrumental in the early implementation of Safe Children's System of Care. He continues to provide direct services for children and families in the Mental Health Youth Service Program and has demonstrated excellent skills as he participates on the task force to implement the new electronic health record for behavioral health. And whereas Eric worked with foster youth, became a foster parent, and is an ordained minister in addition to being married and being a parent to two daughters, who have happily contributed to Eric's and his wife Anne's roles as grandparents. And whereas Eric pursues all his work and recreational endeavors with a great sense of humor, warmth, compassion, and commitment for his clients, friends, and family. And whereas Eric has survived airline travel, flight delays, thousands of miles on the road, camping trips, training days when he was responsible for teaching both willing and sometimes not so willing foster youth independent living skills, during which time he remained enthusiastic and committed to the pursuit of serving the population of youth and he cares so deeply about. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, as follows. Eric is recognized for the significant contribution he has made during the last 30 years of service to the citizens of San Luis Obispo, and it is hoped that he will enjoy many more years of healthy and productive work with children and families. Eric, would you come forward and accept this resolution, please?
Photo first.
Eric, we're never going to look better than we do.
Photo op. Supervisor Meacham, members of the board, Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. I won't reiterate that any of what was included in that very well-written resolution, but I am honored to be here on behalf of Eric's peers to thank him. Eric has had a diverse set of opportunities and experiences with the Mental Health Department over the years, and he really is an example of a person who has built on that to bring now, at this point in his career, an extremely capable set of experiences and skills to the agency. He's contributing in a lot of very, very important ways, and we can't thank him enough for his 30 years and for what he's doing for us still, and hope that he'll be around for a bunch more years. So thank you very much.
Thank you. When I was hired as a temporary help worker in the drug program in 1977 at $4.77 an hour, Dan Wohl, the drug program chief at the time, told me that this was a go-nowhere position, and I think he's right because I haven't gone anywhere. I count it an honor to have served the children and families in San Luis Obispo County, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And finally, we'd like to recognize Pamela Dudley of the Public Health Department.
kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly would, and as with all our longtime employees, there's a lot here, so let me dig in. Whereas Pam Dudley began her career at the County Public Health Department in September 1980 as a public health nurse, was promoted to supervising public health nurse in 1989, director of nursing in 2003, yada, yada, yada. So for the record, I'm reading the resolution, please. Whereas the Public Health Department and the Family Health Services Division have been fortunate to have Pam's knowledge and skills over the years to continually provide high-quality services to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County, yada, yada, yada. And whereas Pam has worked continually to improve the nursing program by writing numerous grants and bringing new programs to our county, such as Adolescent Family Life Program, CalLearn, Nursing Family Partnership, Title X Family Planning Grant, yada, yada, yada. And whereas Pam has demonstrated a dependable and diligent work ethic with excellent knowledge of public health nursing policies, procedures, and protocols, and has used this knowledge to develop innovative methods for assisting the public, to hire, train, and mentor countless public health nurses, yada, yada, yada. And whereas Pam is especially expert in managing budgets as well as in the field of Medi-Cal administrative activities, known affectionately as MAA to those who love and hate the subject matter and the time studies. And whereas Pam has fearlessly led staff through countless drills, pandemics, P-pods, flu pods, and FR-pods. And whereas Pam is known for her resourcefulness and for being an imaginative leader as long as there is always fresh ground coffee. And whereas Pam has overseen and survived renovations and staff moves at every public health department facility in the county over the past three decades. And whereas Pam is a remarkable facilitator, conciliator, and fair, flexible, and calm leader. And whereas Pam has performed her duties with dedication, competency, and care, and has been a conscientious, dependable, loyal employee, and is appreciated for her efforts on behalf of the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors, County of San Luis Obispo, does hereby recognize and honor Pamela Dudley for 30 years of outstanding service to San Luis Obispo County and our residents.
Dr. Penny Bornstein, Public Health Officer, Public Health Administrator. Just want to say a word about Pam as probably the most understated leader that I have worked with. She always maintains a presence of calm and consideration for everyone that she works with, but make no mistake, she's made of steel and really has helped me get integrated into county government with all of her history and knowledge of everything that we do in the public health world. And so I just want to give a personal thank you and also recognize that she obviously has quite a big fan club from amongst her peers and co-workers. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't really have much to say, but I want to thank the appreciation. I just want to put a little plug in that, you know, when I started in 1980, I never really envisioned in being here for 30 years, because really, who could live in Morro Bay and find a job and stay there for 30 years. But the plug about with public health is there's so much to do. I mean, and nurses have a variety of things that they can do, but just in the field of our own county public health, there are 20 different things nurses can do, so you don't ever get bored. If you get bored in communicable disease, you can go to maternal child health. If you get bored in maternal child health, you could go to some other part of public health. There's a wide variety, which has kept me here probably. Plus, I got to do multiple jobs too, and go up the ranks too, which is convenient and nice. So, thank you.
Thank you. Now they get a lot of fans. Okay. Thank you once again. We greatly appreciate your service to the county. With that, we're going to move back to item A1. I have a significant number of requests to speak on this, so we're going to allow the room to clear. We'll go through item A1, and then after that, we will come to conclusion with the consent, and we'll go to public comment, and then conclude business for the day. Any additional requests to speak, could you please get your slips up here so I can see, kind of gauge what kind of time we have at this point. We've got a significant amount of time that's going to be attributed to this item. Where's Mr. Ogre? Or Will, are you going to make the presentation on this? Yeah, I guess I should do that. A second here, I've got... Let's go through public comment, and we'll come back. We'll try to get all these questions answered. Once again, if you have specific questions, please pose those questions. We'll try to get through all of that. If you can be brief, I'd appreciate that as well, because we've got a number of other folks that want to speak on public comment portion of the agenda. So, Will, did you want to go up first on this one, or followed by Steve Page?
Chairman Meacham, members of the board, I'm Will Clemens, Public Works Department, and had a few things on item A1. First, we caught three typos that I'd like to enter into the record for correction on page 1 and 2, and I have copies of those changes that I'll leave here so that the public can see what those are. And the first typo is in the third whereas. We added the word of after cost, pay for the cost of providing wastewater collection. The second is in section 1. We changed the area to which this ordinance applies, the service area. We changed are to is. And second page, section 3D, there's a reference to section 3D, which should be reference section 3E. So those are the three typos that we're correcting. And so for informational purposes, the introduction of this ordinance, there's also some other actions we're asking you to authorize us to send out the legal notice per Prop 218. So that will be mailed out this week. We've also scheduled a public meeting on December 2nd. At 7 p.m. at the Los Osos Middle School to discuss the service charge ordinance. Doors will open at 6 so that for the first hour you can meet some of the project team and some of the various other issues that are going along with the project, and then at 7 we'll be discussing the rates and charges. In addition to that, we will be mailing an informational brochure to the community in addition to the Prop 218 notice. So I just wanted to give you the process that we'll be following.
Okay, great. Thank you, Will. Mr. Page, there you are. And we'll be followed by Don Bearden, please. She'll get it for you.
I want to turn on your speaker.
And there's right at the base of the speaker, there's a button.
Yeah, right there.
Just push it when the green light comes on.
Thank you.
There you go. Okay.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. My name is Steve Page. I'm a homeowner in the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. I would like to make the point that it is my contention that the county has been covering up a material fact for a considerable length of time now and is perpetrating a taxation fraud against the voters of Los Osos. The material fact is that septic tanks are zero discharge, and you only have the right to decommission leach fields. You do not have the right to decommission septic tanks. That is the representation of material fact that you have crucified with the voters of Los Osos. The county has no legal right to require decommissioning of septic tanks. The county does have a legal right to the required decommissioning of leach fields. The county is aware of this legal problem and has purposely covered it up to defraud voters. It lied to homeowners that they had the right to require decommissioning of their existing septic tanks for a step-stage sewer system. It lied that homeowners' yards would have to be torn up. It omitted STEG from step-stage consideration and exaggerated on-site step-stage electrical costs. The county is acting to protect its lie by using omission, by omitting discussion of the lie at the Planning Commission hearings that I went to, at the EIR hearings that I went to, and at the Coastal Commission hearings that I went to in a cover-up of this lie. They did not respond to my complaint about this issue. And it is now removed, the county has now removed step-steg from the design bid competition to cover the lie. The consequent damages suffered by me as a homeowner, and all homeowners in Los Osos are, for on-site tax fraud, it's about $7,500, and for off-site tax fraud, it's about $4,500. And what does this consist of? It consists of reward for primary waste processing, which we should be receiving if we decide to leave our septic tanks in operation, reward for decommissioning the septic tanks in the case that the county insists that we do decommission our septic tanks, and reward for 70% of the cost of solid waste handling, which is from the fine screening report that the county generated. Now, the off-site tax fraud amounts to about $4,500. The reward for cost differences in the differences between the collection systems of step-steg and gravity. And, you know, I just want to say I spent a lot of time on this issue with you guys. I brought it before the Planning Commission. I brought it before the BOS in the EIR issue. I brought it before the Coastal Commission. Nobody wants to listen to me on this issue? Fine. I mean, that's all I have to say. And it's an issue that's doing a rear ugly head, period.
Thank you. Mr. Bearden, and followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning. My name is Don Bearden. I live in Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. I have three items to discuss on this item. Page A1, page 3 says annual costs are based on a per capita indoor water usage of 50 gallons per capita per day. If you do the math on that, you come out with about 2 units per capita per month, or 4 units for 2 people per month. Yet, when you go to page 10 on Exhibit A, the minimum monthly charge is $48.85, which divided by $7.54 per unit is 6.48 units. This is what 3 people should be using per month. It seems to me that 1 or 2 people households are getting overcharged. Okay? On page A1, page 5, it says, we're all supposed to connect to the county's wastewater system within 90 days. That's 13 weeks or 65 working days. If 5,809 connections have to be made, then 90 connections per day need to be made. I don't think that we can be done with inspections and testings. Arroyo Grande gives people 24 months to connect up, as I gave you a copy of Arroyo Grande's code. A1, page 7, section 5, says that it is the duty of the owner to inform the county promptly of all circumstances and of any change in circumstances that will affect the applicability or amount of the charge. What are these changes that they're wanting you to report? Is it a change in the number of people living in the household? Or, you know, what changes, what else are they looking for? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. Julie Tacker, Julie Tacker, followed by Jeff Edwards, please.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I wanted to first comment briefly. October 5th, we had a Los Osos wastewater project update. That lengthy discussion is not part of the Los Osos Wastewater Project website. That day, comments made by Supervisor Gibson that the PowerPoint presentation and access, of course, to the replay of the meeting and the staff report should have all been posted immediately upon the close of that meeting. up until this weekend, it's still not there. So how we got here today isn't explained through the really the only vehicle we have for information, and that is the project website. I do have some questions about the ordinance because I am a board watcher and I watch the Board of Supervisors' agendas, and I took the time to do the research myself to see what was coming before you today with the rates and charges ordinance. My questions relative to the ordinance, Section 3A, there's a possibility of an incentive for hooking up early. Similar question to Mr. Bearden, this 90-day window for hookup. It isn't possible to hook up our community at a rapid pace. And then how do you equitably share that incentive if we're all clamoring to try to save a few dollars by hooking up early? Your submission to the Coastal Commission when the subject of septage and septic tank decommissioning came up last summer, your staff suggested that people will hook up their pipes, leaving the contents of their septic systems in place, and perhaps come pump that out another day, digging up my yard twice. This is infeasible. This does not make sense. And without a septic tank decommissioning plan, I think your ordinance is premature in suggesting that you could actually even have an incentive program, because you just don't know how it's going to work when we get on the ground. Additionally, a question I have, you're asking for our water consumption data or access to it through our purveyors. Personally, I'm opposed to this. I believe it is illegal for you to ask for that information. That is proprietary between me and my purveyor. And when and if you do get access to it, is it now public record? Because you are this other agency, and now all of our records are available to the public.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, followed by Gwen Taylor, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a longtime resident of Los Osos. As you know, at the October 5 meeting, I raised the issue of the USDA money, that is the loan amount versus the state revolving loan fund. And at present, the USDA or stimulus money, we're proposing to borrow $83 million at 3.25%, while the SRF money is anywhere from 0 to 2.75%, and right now it's at $86 million. My question is, why and when will we request more money from SRF and less money for you from USDA? It's my belief that we only need about $35 million from the USDA. And so when will this de-weighting occur is my question. Also, the SRF has a number of incentives. I talked a little bit about that last time. Los Osos qualifies for these incentives. They include principal forgiveness, which is analogous to a grant up to $7.5 million. When are we going to hear about that? When are we going to talk about that? Reduced interest rates. When are we going to talk about 1% or 2%? We've been focused on keeping the payment lower, but just simply paying the loan over a longer period of time doesn't make it more affordable. Really, it just stretches it out, and we end up paying for this thing forever. The rates and charges ordinance before you today, originally this was anticipated to be put forth just before the construction of the project was completed. And then we would be folding the vacant and underdeveloped properties into the whole scheme, again, before the completion of the project. Now that's out the window. What we're looking at now is we're going to bring these vacant lots and underdeveloped properties in later, and there's an automatic reduction provision in the rates and charges ordinance. But that's there. We don't know when it will be operative. It could be 5 years, could be 10 years, might not ever occur. So I think we ought to be candid with the existing property owners and the vacant and underdeveloped property owners. You know, this second 218 may not happen for a long time. There's a number of things that have to happen. And then ultimately, what's going to be the cost per unit to the vacant or undeveloped properties? It could be $75,000 a lot, which is equal to or greater than what these lots are worth in today's market. So let's be candid with the property owners. Lastly, what's the update on the ag and urban reuse program? We haven't heard about that too much. I'm confused at this juncture. Does or does the current project include or not include purple pipe to the middle school, to the Sea Pines golf course, to Baywood Elementary? What is the current configuration of the project? In the CDP, I don't think it's covered. In the USD application, it appears to be, so I'm confused. Thank you for your attention, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Gwen Taylor, please, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. I am Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The ordinance as presented today is lacking in specifics in time and procedure. Assuming that the usage of per capita indoor water will be 50 gallons per day just because the amount has been established in the project's coastal development permit is like counting on the weather. You have no conservation plan in action to even try and evaluate the use of water inside the home. How can you determine water consumption when there are no meters on some properties and consumption cannot be analyzed? Rates for septic tanks discharging septage into the system has not been defined. Is it just for the area outside the prohibition zone in Los Osos, or are trucks from any area in the county going to be able to discharge septage? And how would that affect the rates and charges of the property owners in the inside the prohibition zone? Has the water purveyors agreed to allow the county to access consumption data for the properties to be hooked up to? Why should property owners maintaining extensive irrigated landscaping have special dispensation? Is this wastewater project not being promoted to address the perceived septic tank inefficiency and the advocacy and advancing saltwater intrusion into our water basin? The Public Works needs to address the ordinance with a more clear specification before this board approves something that may be a detriment not only to Los Osos, but to the county and to you gentlemen. If you have read this, I am amazed. If you have not, you should. Thank you.
Lindy Owen, please, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone. I'm here to talk about basically this rates and charges discussion, but even more importantly for me is official removal of competition. I think that basically your 218 assessment is null and void if you remove the competitive promise that was in our ballot information. 218, we said all along that people should not pass it because it was going to be a blank check. Now you've introduced rates and charges, the blank check part of our 218 vote. This 218 that we passed to assess ourselves $25,000 per home is null and void because you knew, the county, Pavo and Mr. Gibson knew when they issued the first 218 ballot information that the second 218 for the undeveloped lots amounting in $21 million to help with the project was never going to happen. They knew we had no water supply for those people, and if it did happen, it would be years in the making. Therefore, our first 218 is fraud, is null and void, and it's fraudulent. I don't even know where to start. This project needs to be stopped. You need an outside assessor to come in. It's wrought with mistakes, errors, cost overruns already. Doing business with Montgomery Watson Harza, who is not even allowed to be competing within the process of the gravity collection because they were part of the bidding process of the EIR. Everything is questionable at this point, and I think you would be better to stop digging and try to figure out how to get out of this hole without taking all of us down with it. There's no cap on construction overruns, so this first rates and charges for your 21 for Pavo and Mr. Gibson's $21 million mistake then continues on to if construction goes 40% over, as it did the last time Montgomery Watson Harza was involved in building a sewer in Los Osos. Who's going to pay for that? Rates and charges? That could amount to, I did the math, it could amount to $80 million overrun. You better get some investigation going on this. This is absolutely on the edge of full-on corruption.
Mr. DeFatta, please, and it will be followed by Piper Riley.
Thank you, Chairman Meacham. We are not the county's ATM machine. I'd like to see that a cap, a limit on the spending on the cap and sewer services charges, and it only be used for operating and maintenance charges, not for loans for the construction of the project. The project can't stand on its own, then you got to find an alternative. Don't vote for Gibson's voodoo financing that's attached to rates and charges. Nine loans tell me that he wants to get. The project can't stand on its own. On the subject of broader, can you afford a dime? California yesterday is, I heard, real unemployment over 20%. People beggars do anything for a buck. People raiding their retirement funds. Please find a cheaper sewer project. Life is precious. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Riley, and followed by Eric Greening, please. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Piper Riley from Los Osos. To push through an ordinance which is marred by legitimate controversy is wrong. Rates must be based on affordability standards according to the EPA. Did any of the gravity sewer teams give you a guaranteed maximum price? No. However, the design-build team did. $50 million less than the conventional estimates, plus performance guarantees and caps on costs. The staff reports, plural, seem to obscure more than they reveal facts needed to make sound decisions. Issues raised from past presentations still have never been answered. The report and conditions to eliminate design-build contracting are plainly deceptive and not required by the USDA. The Los Osos project is a clear example of Public Works' broken public trust spending spree. The project approach of co-equal analysis, which was used to get the 218 assessment passed, did not happen. This included the three-pronged approach to affordability: technology, select the best alternative; project delivery, fastest and lowest cost, which included design build; and three, best financing, lowest terms and best terms. These elements, when glued together, were to form a three-legged affordability stool. Now we see the sleight of hand at each project approval point. The lower cost technology was abandoned. The lower cost and faster design build teams were duped, and there were blatant violations of contracting law committed. Finally, more expensive funding by USDA and bridging with US Bank instead of SRF or AARA monies are being used. Like dominoes carefully set, each element is blamed for knocking the other, more affordable solution over, and so it goes. Myths like environmentally superior, shovel-ready, bids for locals, and higher interest, longer-term loans cost less were expounded. Worse, the staff doesn't provide meaningful information on total cost. Just as alternatives with corresponding costs were hidden from public view, the current collection expense was never updated for today's costs. With nearly $10 million more added to the $40 million already spent on Los Osos, we have no more than a pile of recycled documents and not even an assemblance of a bid package prepared. Please hold a review and get answers before approving rates and charges that are carte blanche based. Thank you for my time.
Mr. Greening, followed by Lacey Cooper, please.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and some of my questions have been asked by others. I may be asking them from a slightly different angle or in a different order. But the issue of the percentage in the variable component, certainly there has not been a final decision. There has been discussion, and the discussion is based on cost projections that don't seem to have... Where is the actual incentive for the frugal? In other words, if the variable component goes higher, why does it seem like everyone's rates go higher? Where is the actual reward for frugality? And I do think that a midpoint between the 1090 and the 5545 needs to be investigated and costed out, but also defended. And of course, it needs to be pointed out that to the extent that there is a variable component, it's integral to a conservation plan we haven't yet seen even an outline of. And so I share Gwen Taylor's question as to the status of that conservation plan. Is there somewhere a draft form at an administrative level? Is it still just conceptual? What will, you know, how will this fit into it? I also share Mr. Bearden's question about the rate of making the actual connections and Ms. Tacker's question about how that connects to the rate of decommissioning. In other words, would everyone's yard be visited twice, once for connection and once for decommissioning with tearing up, putting back, or would there be an attempt to stampede the decommissioning within a very short time frame? And if so, what resources are available for the pumping, the hauling, and what locations are available for the destination of that much septage at once? And to the extent that throughout the county septic tanks fail and people will be needing to call on these same services, to what extent will they remain available to the entire county? So, I mean, we're talking about a material that is very, you can't just put it in a sewage treatment plant. I remember when the city of Santa Barbara, with a large system, was fined for simply having the contents of 10 septic tanks go into their system in a day, and it totally made the bacterial microorganism ecosystem of their plant go crazy, and they turned into very toxic emitters for a while just because of absorbing the contents of 10 septic tanks.
So,
lots of unanswered questions. Thank you.
Lacey Cooper, please, followed by Bo Cooper. Good morning.
Yes, the first thing I want to ask is that you extend the 45 days to past January 1st, because this is a holiday season. The 45 days after you send out the notice this week will be when you have the final hearing, you know, and then the ordinance will pass, and I'd like to extend it into January. I don't think there's that much of a rush, and they're not going to do a lot during the holidays anyway. And you can do that because in Prop 218, the Constitution 13D, it's not less than 45 days, so you can extend it if you want to be truly democratic. I'm going to have questions on this ordinance. I can't get them all in. On your A1, page 3 chart, I have a question. Is the variable O&M and replacement cost, is that what used to be the general benefits? We have an $11 million general benefit, which comes out to $10 on these rates and charges. And I have a question about that, because the HCP benefits the entire community. And Pablo Ogren had said in 2007, before the Prop 218 vote, that this HCP cost and other costs would be spread to the entire community, and they would have to have a special tax, a two-thirds required vote. And that hasn't happened, and now it's on this bill, which is probably illegal. The next thing I have, I want to go back to your, I think the variable is going to hurt. You have a 55-45. Families could pay as much as $125, depending on their indoor use, and they do have to shower and wash their clothes and eat. So I think this is egregious. This alone could have been an item for discussion and
Supervisor Gibson would not budge on that. You could do something between 90-10 and 55-45, and I have to rush. This is ridiculous. We're doing this because you don't have enough for the plan. The plan is $154 million. We were assessed $127 million. You're $27 million short, and you're trying to put it on our backs, and it's wrong. And even there, Pablo Ogren said, hey, we've got a water issue. We shouldn't be having to do all the development charges, the HCP, the LCP, all this stuff to get these things ready. You're not going to be ready by 2014. People are going to have to put on their rates and charges. All the overruns are going on their rates and charges. It is not even a vote. It's a protest letter vote, and it's, you know, it's going to pass, and that's why you put it on the rates and charges. And this is wrong, wrong, wrong.
Mr. Cooper, followed by Frank Asilio, please.
Bo Cooper, I want to thank Lacey for her good analysis and all the other good citizens who are speaking. The rates and charges ordinance is for a number of reasons that they've told you is wrong, is unjust, unfair, blah, blah, blah. I have a more technical procedural question. Because it, I think, is unfair, as a good citizen, my plan is to help educate the citizenry in Los Osos and let them know what the problems are. I believe that if they know what the problems are, they will write a protest letter against this particular ordinance. My understanding is it needs 50% plus one, a majority, to protest the ordinance. So my question is, Will there be a statement on the notification of service charge that goes to all the people? Will there be information saying you have a right to protest? This is what you do. So I'd like that to be on the letter. I need to know how many people who are going to get it. How many people are going to get it? Is it just the property owners who will be getting the letter? Is it the property owners and the undeveloped properties as well? Also, how much does the different votes weigh? Does my single family resident have one vote, and the school district, for example, do they have more than one vote, or is it one vote per property? How does that voting thing work? So how many votes will there be? So if I want to get 50 plus one, let me know how many votes I need to get, how many protest letters I need to help get submitted to stop what I think is an unfair process. So I need to know that. I need to know what my vote weighs. Is it equal to everybody else's vote too? I think those are the big questions I have. If anybody has any of the public people, because you don't have much time, you only get 3 minutes, anybody needs more information, rockofthecoast.com, has a lot of good information about that. And in a more general kind of way, gentlemen, I really encourage you to man up. Bruce Gibson is pushing through things. You're listening to people who are not mad, not crazy mad, but intelligent, who've obviously considered the issues. We say a lot of good things, and doesn't seem to have much take with you guys. I want you to really think about what's right for the people, your obligations to the people. I understand working collaboratively, and you got scratches back, he scratches your political process. I got all that. But you also have a major obligation to the people to defend them, and to defend them is to not let them be taxed out of their homes. So I encourage you to, I know you're going to pass this ordinance, but if you're thoughtful, I would consider that. I would have you consider that it may not be the right thing to do for the people, and the whole project in general is not been right for so many reasons that people have described. Please man up. Please collaborate, but collaborate in a way that works for the people. Don't let Bruce bully you. Bruce has been bullying you. If you've seen, they're taking that, and please
Thank
be
you,
careful
Mr.
about that. Thank you.
Mr. Asilio, please, and followed by Al Barrow.
I'd like to thank First Supervisor Meacham for responding to my email about the questions I had on October 5th that weren't answered. They're passing out the first sheet of that email. And I'd like to bring your attention first to the bottom part where it says, question one, I asked about what is the build-out population for Los Osos? And the entire community is 19,713. Also, I want to know what is the build-out population within the Prohibition Zone. Well, you can see it's between 7,800 and 8,428. However, in the USDA, and this is why I addressed the question, because each one of you have a responsibility for these numbers. In the USDA application, you put 18,500. That would be the build-out population within the Prohibition Zone. So if you take the build-out population of 18.5 away from the 19.713, you come out with an outside population of the prohibition zone of 1,213. Well, there's already 2,000 people living outside the prohibition zone. So they're already in deficit. So that means where are you going to shift your population? I just don't understand, because we have 14,000 total, 500. So when I'm looking at these numbers, they don't add up. It doesn't matter what the numbers are from your staff. You, all of you, should know what these numbers are, because you all go and you on your election and you say, I'm going to make sure government's efficient and effective. I'm going to make sure they spend their money correctly. Well, if you don't know the numbers and you're relying on staff, because staff's not the ones going to vote for rates and charges for whatever, you are. And ultimately, you're responsible. So when I look at the 1.2 million gallons of dry weather, that's for the population of 18.5, that states on page 7 of the USDA report. Then I read about the peak hour wet weather flow of 2.5 million. That's a doubling. That's over doubling the amount. So when in my mind, if you're going to double it, that's equivalent to about 37,000 population at that wastewater without any inflow from rainwater or anything that would be coming in. I also look at your Exhibit A and B, where the minimum, where the charge with minimum charge is 48.85 on Exhibit A. Exhibit B is 17.19. That's a difference of 31.76. That's if the undeveloped properties can build. And my question on that email is, where's the water going to come from? Because in your draft EIR, you talk about 60 feet of seawater per year, and you mitigate that. Well, new data shows that it's much higher. It's 700 feet a year. Again, your data, again, is wrong. And you're the ones who are voting on this data. So I would ask my staff, if I was sitting there,
thank you,
what
Mr.
is the correct information? Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Burrow, now followed by Jerry Walsh, please.
Good morning. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and I've stood for affordability for a long time, for about 12 years here. I've decided to dedicate my retirement to benefit of the lower-income people in the county who are on the short end of the stick, and it's getting worse. First of all, this project is going to cost, because of this rates and charges, about $40,000 per lot for development unit equivalent. One question I have for you, if you could get that answer, how many development unit equivalents, which are equal to one vote, are there in this vote? In scanning the ordinance, there's no mention of vacant lot, vacant property owners. That part of this ordinance is to pay for the vacuum in the funding, because you don't have a 218, you don't have any monies, with the exception of the first 218, which included the vacant property owners, the one in Los Osos, which we're paying for now, $18 a month. By the way, that cost has not been included in the project cost, although you're using everything that was bought for it. The logic here defies the imagination. The second question I have is, where is the 2,900 jobs this project is going to create? Please answer that. My neighbors, when told about this, I talked to about five different people, were absolutely outraged and angry, literally angry, that you would ask them to pay for somebody else's investment in vacant properties. So I think we ought to consider that. Now, what people may not realize is $160 a month to pay for the capital cost of these loans, but this is in addition to all of that. This is in addition to all the other expenses. It hasn't been very clear. Could you turn on my computer, please? Political expediency in Los Osos and San Luis is a wash. Philosopher Kant said the moral politician, someone who conceives of the principle of political expediency in such a way that they can coexist with his morality. Fortunately, Frank Meacham doesn't believe in that, and he stood for what's right. The rest of you should follow his leadership, and I ask you to reconsider this.
Now, I'd like you to look at the definition of constructive fraud. Constructive fraud is a legal fiction used in the law to describe situations where a person or entity gains unfair advantage over another by deceitful, unfair methods, intent not to be shown. You're now in a situation where you're under federal law with the USDA loan.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow.
Thank you.
Jerry Walsh, followed by Richard Margeson, please.
Jerry Walsh, Los Osos. At the last county update on the Los Osos sewer, there was no emphasis that rates and charges were going to be brought up. And there's been no unveiling of the rates and charges to the public since. They've been just kind of slid under the radar. They should have had a public workshop before you established the charges so that you'd have the public weighing in on this. Not a town hall meeting afterwards like those of the past, which were basically infomercials. These town hall meetings started out by giving a full biography of all the people involved. By the time that was done, a third of the audience left. Then people would drone on and on and on about what they were going to do. By that time, over two-thirds of the audience left. Then it was deemed too late to have very many questions, and only a few questions were taken on little slips of paper that you had to hand in, and then the questions were carefully chosen to be county-friendly. There was no give and take at these town hall meetings. And yes, there were availability of questions for individuals to answer standing around the room beforehand, but a lot of the times you'd get answers, well, that's not my department, or Pavel will answer that later. It wasn't brought out in these questions to the public a lot. Also, the town hall meeting being scheduled for December 2nd, why do we have to wait that long? That's only 12 days before you're going to be approving this. How can people change things in this ordinance if there's only 12 days? And there's only 12 days then for people to know about this and protest. Why does it have to be December 2nd? And I think that's also the night of the CSD meeting. So how can people choose between CSD meeting and this? We just don't need this to be just slid in. Please ask a lot of questions today. We need to vet this thoroughly. Like the retrofit ordinance had to be vetted by a member of the public four times and be brought back to you. Just a simple retrofit ordinance. So how can you expect in 12 days to have the public look at all of this, understand it, and make changes in 12 days before it's brought back to you? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margeson, and followed by Elaine Watson, please.
Richard Margeson, I agree with Jerry Walsh. You've chosen the path of least resistance. December 2nd, right after Thanksgiving, right before the start of holiday events and preparation for Christmas season. I'm going to talk about two basic issues I have. There's many other questions that I have about this ordinance, but you're basically basing the rates and charges on the assumption that of 5 units per single-family resident. So I went back, and you chose the 55-45 for conservation. I actually think going that way, you took the affordability potential out of this ordinance. I think it should have been closer to what staff wanted at the 90-10 or what Mr. Gimson wanted at the 90-10. Or somewhere in between. But I went back based on the formula in this ordinance of using the January and February consumption numbers or what most closely relate to those. For the last 6 years, for the Los Osos CSD Water District, which is half of the community's water services that will be connecting to this project, the average, I also have to qualify, more than 95% of the connections for the Los Osos CSD Water Department are residential. Very little commercial in there, under their purview. The average for the last 6 years, is over 8 units per month. So right off the bat, you're adding more than $22 to the average bill in Los Osos on top of the base charge and your $7.54 volume charge. Because your revenue projections on page 3, all of your revenue projections in these three categories are based on that 5 and then tiering it down for multifamily, mobile home, and non-residential. You're going to have an abundance of excessive revenue under this rate structure based on what's actually happening in Los Osos. And water conservation is not going to bring the winter consumption down 3 units per month per household. That would be 75 gallons per day, gentlemen. This ordinance should have had review. It's going to end up like the retrofit ordinance. It's going to end up with people coming back and correcting it repeatedly.
You need to vet this
today and ask the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Markinson. My last request, Ms. Watson.
Lane Watson, Los Osos. Most of my questions are going to have to do with the ordinance as it stands. The first one was not addressed in the ordinance, and that is, if a property has installed a gray water system, is the county going to adjust usage flows to reflect the reduction in flows? I think gray water is going to be a very important component for many homes, so that needs to be addressed. The rest of the questions have to do with the ordinance as it stands. Eric and Julie addressed the first one, page 5, section 2. How do you expect almost 5,000 connections to be accomplished within 90 days of the wastewater system being deemed operational? Where are you going to put 5,000 tanks full of septic within 90 days? That's a huge issue, in addition to the pumping, backfilling, et cetera, all the other things that are involved in decommissioning these tanks and getting them hooked up, or the wastewater hooked up. The next one is on page 6, section 3. If we must connect within 90 days, why would there be a need to waive up to 6 months of service charges for those properties that connect within 90 days? The next one is page 6, section 3C. How can you automatically lower rates when just through the establishment of connection fees? The and or question needs to be clarified. Does that mean the connection fees, these connection fees will be when properties are built? And are you prepared to issue building permits when these fees are levied? That's a very big question. Page 6, section D1. If no one property will ever be charged less than one unit per month, isn't the minimum charge actually the minimum charge plus the volume charge for one unit? That would mean that the base charge would be $56.39 instead of $48.85. The next one, page 7, section D2. If non-residential charges will be based on actual consumption per 12-month period, is the consumption and revenue understated on page 3 under the non-residential category? That's the issue that Richard just discussed. Page 7, section 6. Is that portion of the fees for the undeveloped properties going to be on the tax rolls? If not, would you please explain this? Another wording correction, page 7, section 5. The wording is off on the last sentence. Our water situation will certainly dictate that undeveloped properties will not be developed. So the cost of this, as many other speakers have already said, the cost of this project should be scaled to the present population's current assessment.
Thank you. That concludes the public comment on this. I did receive a couple of other questions from Ms. Watson, and for those of you that, and I understand, 3 minutes is difficult to try to get everything out there, but I encouraged Ms. Watson to email questions to me, and I would pass those along to try to get answers. So if you can do that in advance, then we can try to get through as much as we can. A couple of questions that I'd asked staff to be prepared to answer. is on Section 3, page 6, page 7. I think as a condition of the receipt of service, all property owners receiving service authorize the county to access consumption data. Will there be privacy legal issues for tenants regarding that who refuse to release consumption data? And in Section 6, page 7, the annual sewer service charges established by Section 3 of this ordinance may be placed upon the tax roll. What portion of the service charge could potentially be put on the tax roll? Will it be the portion allocated to the underdeveloped properties? I believe that question was asked. So we're going to take a break, allow staff to get prepared to answer the questions that have been posed, and then we will come back. We'll be back at 10:30. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to reconvene, and where's staff? Mr. Ogren? You and your staff, are you prepared? Oh, there's Mr. Clemens right there, sorry. I want to be able to go through these questions that the folks have posed, and if there's some commonality in some of these questions, we can address those as well. And once again, I know in some cases we don't like the answers to some of the questions, but they are what they are. So with that, let's get started on the questions and go through them. Mr. Clemens?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Will Clemens, County Public Works. I have a PowerPoint where it kind of brings us to where we are today. Would you like me to go through that first and then address the questions?
Yeah, I think would be better.
That would be best.
In case some of the questions are answered in that discussion. So going back to the discussion we had on the 5th regarding setting rates flat versus variable and how much of each. This chart is really intended there to give you some concepts to keep in mind on the implications of a flat versus a variable rate along that continuum that is shown there. So with the difference between a flat and a variable, with a flat rate you have a tight range of possible rates that are charged. There's more emphasis on a per connection basis, of course less emphasis on consumption. The flatter the charge, the greater benefit to the larger households, and it's less conservation oriented. As you move along the continuum to a variable charge, you get a broader range of rates that are charged. It's more based per person than per connection. Of course, more emphasis on consumption provides a greater benefit to smaller households who use less water and is more conservation oriented. So that's the concepts between a flat versus variable along that continuum. So I wanted to make the point that we don't just choose rates arbitrarily because we like a certain percentage, but we have to be able to justify it per Prop 218. And so the rate structures that we provided, there was some justification behind them. It wasn't so important of what the actual percentage came out to be, but it was what costs were being covered by the flat versus the variable charge. So this chart shows what was chosen, Exhibit A, as people refer to the 55-45 split. But what that really is doing is covering the debt service costs with the flat charge and all of the O&M charges with variable. That's what was chosen. Versus staff's recommendation was what turned out to be a 90-10 split, covered debt service and fixed O&M, so all your fixed costs were being covered by a flat rate, and then the only variable portion was variable O&M. So, but Exhibit A is in the ordinance is what was chosen, the 55-45. So this is the rate structure impacts of the difference between those two options. So you can see the blue is what was chosen, the 55-45 covering just debt service on the flat rate versus the other option. So you can see it's a much steeper curve. So as usage increases along the bottom, in units we show it, but roughly using the 50 gallons per capita per day, you could see this would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in a household, assuming they use that usage. So you can see the variance. And what we wanted to drop in here, the black line, so we've been discussing of what was estimated in 2007 as far as monthly costs, and it was $200 a month was our estimate in 2007. So this line shows that those people paying a usage base, or not a usage, but rates and charges above the $95, because our assessment is estimated at $105 per month now. So anyone using over or getting charged over $95 a month on their rates and charges would be paying more than that $200, and those using or being charged less on rates and charges would come under the $200.
And I wonder, I'm looking down the dais, seeing a furrowed brow or two. I just want to be sure we're good on that. Again, $200 a month is the monthly equivalent of both the Prop 218 that was passed in 07 and the proposed rates and charges. And with the USDA loan and an assumption about other financing, the Prop 218 assessment pencils out at $105 a month. So that's where this $95 comes from. The black line is the $95 a month that added with the property tax assessment is where it shows relative. It's just a point of comparison relative to the $200 a month, which has been our estimate of the monthly cost there.
Go ahead. So you can see this is Exhibit A, and as was discussed last time, this this includes the rates in order to cover what was in the allocated to the vacant parcels in the first 218. But more likely, since these rates don't become effective until the plan is operational in 2014, we have the automatic reduction to Exhibit B. So that's what we show here. You can see the debt service cost has come way down, and so now your flat versus variable under the option that was chosen becomes more of a 30% flat, 70% variable, because you just cover your debt service with the flat versus staff's recommendation last time, which drops from 90-10 to 85-15. So those, again, we're still covering the same cost with the flat versus the variable, but as they're reduced, that's the rate structure. And again, here's the same chart we showed between the two options, the steeper versus the more flat rate increase with more units. And again, we dropped the line in at $95, showing that what this really illustrates is the savings compared to that $200 2007 estimate is really mostly going to your smaller households in this instance. Not until you start using 12 units per month does that increase above what was estimated at $200 in 2007. So this is the more likely scenario that will be in place, but and it's reflected as Exhibit B in the ordinance. And so that's kind of where we're at today between the two options that were presented on the 5th, and the one was chosen. And I'll be happy to try to answer these relevant questions to the ordinance. And I'll start off with, let's see, one question asked about the provision in the ordinance where property owners are required to inform the county of certain changes in their property usage. basically, this is just in there to show that the property owner is ultimately responsible. We have internal procedures where, for example, if a house is built on a property, we would know when that took place. We could tell when they're connected to the sewer, and we would start charging the sewer to them. But that doesn't limit or relieve the property owner of informing the county if there is a change in his land use or additional building units. So it's not something that's, it's more of just showing that the property owner is ultimately responsible for what goes on in his property, I guess is the easy way to put it.
Excuse me one second. I think, Mr. Patterson, do you have a question on...
Well, it was a question for Mr. Clemens when we...
When you... Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There was some discussion of the minimum charge. Again, as we showed, minimum charges aren't based on usage. They're based on the debt service and the number of accounts per category. There was several questions on accessing the water consumption data, and was there legal issues, and we don't believe there is. Other systems do the exact same thing that we're discussing here in this ordinance, and they haven't indicated that there's a legal issue. Talking about no meters on some properties, water meters will be a requirement for connection to the sewer system, so even if today there are no meters, that will be a requirement of connecting to the system. There was a discussion about septage charges, where those trucks will be accepted from. That will be addressed in the rules and regulations ordinance, which is to come. Which discusses things like what you can put in the sewer system, what you can't. So we anticipate that will be addressed there. But as far as the rates go, we set our septage rates similar to the city of San Luis Obispo, just so that there wasn't a financial incentive for one area to truck their waste to another. But in addition to that financial incentive, there will actually be an area set up where septage trucks will be accepted from. Credit for irrigation was questioned. Why would we not charge people for irrigation? Well, if they're irrigating, the water isn't going in the sewer system, so we can't charge them for that if they can prove that with evidence. So certainly that's an issue, but that's what would be addressed through the water purveyors.
One common question was in regard to the number of units that would have the 90-day time frame in which to convert once that notice is given.
Right. So the 90-day time period, that is certainly something that we feel is reasonable. It's 90 days from the county noticing, sending out the notice. So there's certainly going to be a process for connecting the entire town to the system. And we'll work out that process, and notices will be given on a schedule. However, there's nothing set in stone at this point, so if your board wants to extend that time period, it's certainly your prerogative to do that.
I guess what I'm looking for is, would there be an opportunity to incorporate some type of language to that effect? That, I mean, if there's not enough service out there available to be able to make these changes, is there an opportunity for the homeowner to have an extended time frame in order to do that? And from what I've heard from some is that, based upon what they found out, that the outside people coming in to do this, it would probably charge a higher rate. So I'm trying to figure out a way that maybe we could incorporate something into the language here that would allow for them an extended period of time, and I'm not sure how we could do that or what we can do with that.
Maybe I'd speak to that when we get to comments.
Okay.
there were some questions on the notification, the letter that will be going out Who gets it? It will be going out to property owners. So the property owners will receive that. They're the ones that will pay the rates and charges. So the way 218 has a protest. So, for example, if you have two owners of one parcel and they both protest, it's just per parcel. So that would be one parcel that is being protested. It only takes one of those owners to protest. If one doesn't protest and the other protests, it's still counted as a protest for that parcel.
But it doesn't. You can't get both folks to file two protests and count as two.
Correct. That's not how it works.
And could we? Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As to the number of votes, it's per account or per parcel.
Per parcel.
And so the total number of votes, I guess, would be represented by your total number of accounts on page A13, just over 5,800 separate accounts. Is that roughly it?
Roughly, not completely, because there's certainly, for example, mobile homes. Those are the numbers of mobile homes on one, perhaps one or two parcels. I'm not sure how many parcels those mobile home parks have, but so it's going to be less than this number.
Okay.
But it's the total number of properties that are within this district.
Okay. And on equal vote basis, not
right.
Weighted.
And I guess in regard to, I think it was Mr. Cooper's question and a couple of others, the weight of the vote, how that is determined, and how would these folks find out the number of parcels, where these votes are going to be, how they're going to be calculated? I mean, is that something that's available to everybody?
We certainly can make that available.
And we can make that available how, on the website or what?
Sure.
Right there. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I also believe the question was how many in opposition it takes to
takes 50% plus one.
That's to
The parcels.
To make it go forward.
Either way.
If we receive protest of 50% plus one, then the board can't impose the rates. And that how to protest will be on that notification letter.
That's a little confusing because I was watching the water rates in Paso, and it took less than 50% plus one protest to put it to another election.
No. The 218 is different than what they did is went back out and got a petition to put it on an initiative, and it only takes 10% of the registered voters to do that.
Okay. There was a question about the timing of the public meeting and how can we change the ordinance with only 12 days. Well, once this ordinance is introduced today, there are no changes that can be made to the ordinance. So that's not the purpose of the public meeting, to change the ordinance, but to explain the rates and charges and how they were arrived at, how people can protest if they desire. There was comments on the minimum charge plus the provision that the volume charge won't be less than one unit. So it's true the volume charge won't be less than one unit when it's set, but there's provision in the ordinance that says if property owners can present evidence that their actual usage is less than what was calculated, whether it was one unit or five units, if they can show that their actual usage was less, then they get a credit for that. So there's
is that, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to apologize for the behavior of the constituents who are here in front of this in this hearing.
I will adjourn this meeting and we will come back at a later time. Either we settle down and we listen to the answers to this, or I'll just adjourn it and we'll come back later.
That was all, Mr. Chairman. I believe we do owe you and my other colleagues a civil discussion and a conversation with staff to get the information that we need to make our decision.
Mr. Hogan?
Chairman Meacham, members of the board,
Section 3, I guess it's D1B.
D1A.
D1B. If conclusive evidence is provided that the annualization calculation used in subsection 3 results in a computed consumption that is higher than the premise's actual consumption, the county may adjust the sewer service charge. That's where the ordinance speaks to the credit that Mr. Clemens was testifying to your board.
Okay, go on, please.
So question on where do the 2,900 jobs come from? That is something that the USDA calculates, so they can ask the USDA that question. We staff did not come up with that number. There was discussion about an overabundance of revenue if usage comes in higher than what's estimated with the rate structure. And that's true with any water system that's based on variable rates, the sewer system that has a variable component. You have to begin with an assumption, and then if your usage is higher, that will result in higher revenue. If it's lower, you'll come up short. And certainly, the Prop 218 indicates that, you know, we cannot collect more than it costs to run the system. So if we find that that's the case when these rates go into place and that conservation isn't where we need it at a particular time period, your board certainly has the prerogative to reduce the rates. And that's what we do in other districts that we operate. For example, every year down in Napomo, there's a landscape maintenance fee that is charged. And it's been established at a certain level, but every year we go to your board with a rebate to those properties because we don't need that much revenue to do that system. So the same case here, we're establishing the rate at a level based on assumptions, and if needed, your board can adopt, as it will do every year, what the rates need to be in order to collect the revenue needed. And the ordinance does, as is our custom for sewer service, our sewer systems, we collect these rates and charges on the tax roll, but the ordinance also gives provision to send bills. So it's left up to your board to make that decision, and that won't be made until we actually have to start collecting these service charges in 2014. So I think that was, there was a question about gray water. So again, just as Mr. Ogren indicated, the section of the ordinance that allows us to give credit if people can provide conclusive evidence that their usage is less than what was calculated, certainly if we can identify a gray water system and can get some evidence, that will be an opportunity to provide a credit to that householder.
I want to go back to, I think, the first one of the first questions that was posed, and I'm going to go to legal counsel on this one, relative to the decommissioning of septic tanks not being allowed. Can you address that for us, Mr. Jensen?
I'm not aware of any authority for the assertions that were made by members of the public. It seems pretty clear to us that that is possible. That has happened in a number of situations.
All right, thank you. Then I'm going to go to my colleagues for questions at this point. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clemens, you answered one of my questions already, and that is credit for gray water use. People are buying the water and not disposing of it in the sewer if they're using gray water systems, and so they can get credit for that, and there will be an opportunity or a mechanism for them to do that at some point.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The other question that I had was what information will actually be included in the packet that goes out to the residents establishing the rates and charges? They'll have what type of information included?
The legal notice that will be mailed out this week includes, basically, the Constitution outlines what's to be included in that notice. Basically, you have to tell them what the service charges are, the purpose of the charges, how they were calculated, how they can protest, and all of that information will be provided. But in addition, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be sending out a informational brochure that goes a little bit deeper than that legal notice on how the rates were established, and that will be a basis for our discussion at the community meeting.
Will you have the tables that you've included in previous packets that allows for comparison relative to amount, the amount of water used?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the metrics you provided today and yesterday. Seems like it is a challenging project, and we have concerns coming to us at all times. But one thing I'd like to know more about it, about our efforts, and you had something similar that you presented last time we talked about the sewer project, is our efforts reaching out to other means of getting loans that are more acceptable or lower rates on an ongoing basis. Because no matter, people buy a single car and they're knocking on different bank doors to see who gives them a better deal. Longer-term, lower rates. And is there a way to deal with those? Maybe their income level is not there. Do we have any discretion to deal with them at a time that's appropriate?
Well, as far as what our efforts are, as far as getting financing for this project, certainly we've been working with the various governmental agencies that provide funding. And this is one of the steps in the SRF application process, is they want to see our rates and charges adopted, and then what they will do is they will make decisions on reduced interest, extended term, principal forgiveness. So they make that decision once they see what the cost to the property owners is going to be. Based on that information. So this step we're taking today is a step in that process for the SRF. We also are pursuing grants, various grants. So anything that we are successful in obtaining as far as grants will simply serve to reduce these costs. And again, your board will have the discretion to adopt rates on a yearly basis that are less than these maximums that are being approved at this time.
Glad to hear that, and we can discriminate as who pays less or more, but are there other ways of helping those who are of less income level?
Certainly, we can see if there's any programs out there. We've had discussions with the State Water Board on possibly a loan program for the on-lock costs, so that may be able to help not just those at lower income levels, but certainly the whole community.
Can we, on a timely matter, receive this information as you accumulate and put something together that we know that it's always on the front of the burner, that we are seriously looking at other funding and how it would help us? I know I agree what you're saying, that this is the beginning of the process to open more doors to help the community at large. I would like to keep hearing that at all times, if possible.
Along the same lines, Mr. Clemens, I know the question was raised by Mr. Edwards in regard to the SRF and the percentage rate there relative to the USDA funding, and is there an opportunity to seek more funding and then not take as much from USDA? I'm sure you guys have done some calculations. Can you tell us, in regard to that statement, is there an opportunity to get more money from state revolving and reduce the interest rate costs?
that would be certainly an opportunity that the State Water Board would decide how much they want to give us based on our application. But remember, I think we've all known that the monthly cost is higher under the SRF program. So if the goal is to have a higher monthly cost and a shorter time period, you know, we can do that, but I wouldn't recommend that. We're building a 40 to 50 year system, this sewer treatment plant. So financing it over 20 years at a lower interest cost, that would, you're basically upfronting the cost for those people that are living there for the first 20 years, and those who live for the second 20 years would be getting a free ride. So the goal is to match your debt with the life of your asset so that everybody pays equally and pays less on a monthly basis.
Okay. One other question I have, it kind of on page A16, on C, and it talks about the action to approve the collection of assessments and or connection fees on undeveloped or underdeveloped properties within the service area shall automatically become effective. If this is the case, does this basically suggest that if once that assessment becomes effective, they now have entitlement to be able to build? Because you're asking them to, they're going to be absorbed into the assessment, but does that give them the ability to build on their property?
No, that action does not give them the ability to build on their property.
And that, okay. If I were a property owner, I'd be a little concerned about that. But.
Well, Mr. Gibson? Well, and Mr. Chairman, that's the crux of why an assessment hasn't been proposed for undeveloped properties. We want to gain greater certainty that undeveloped properties have an ability to build before putting them under the consideration of a Prop 218 similar to the one that went on the developed properties. Again, we have 4 years roughly until the start of the operations of this plant. We're hopeful that we can provide greater certainty for undeveloped properties, that they would have a normal channel, normal path to get to development. And I'm, you know, talking to staff, we're watching that very closely. I believe we can get there. But until such time as feel confident, I think we're going to hold back on an assessment. I think we can show that once that certainty is greater, it's to the benefit of the undeveloped property owner to go through an assessment process, because the cost of financing that is less than the individual property owner could get if they had to go to a bank to finance a connection fee. So we'll be talking about that, but this ordinance had to be two-tiered to account for both possibilities. But when that trigger does occur, then Exhibit B becomes the law of the county at this point, and the rates drop accordingly.
Okay. Then I just have one other question, and it was in regard to A17 at the very top that Mr. Logan read. But if you look at A16 on A, it says, in no case will the annualization calculation result in water consumption of less than 12 units. So are these conflicting?
No, that's being established for the calculation is establishing the sewer charge for the next year. And then after that year is complete, if the property owner can provide evidence that their actual usage was less, we will give them credit for that actual usage.
Do you want me to go to the other colleagues?
Would you please clarify when you said the first 20 years and after 20 years they'll have a free ride? I wasn't sure as to what you meant with that.
Basically, we're discussing different financing time periods, and really the goal is to try to match your borrowing to the life of your asset. That way the people that are using that asset are paying the costs, versus if we're building a 40 or 50 year asset and then we finance it over 20 years, then the people that are paying for the first 20 years are paying all the debt for that 50-year asset.
But
and those who live after the 20-year period...
I would think that those who are living after the 20 years, if they were to sell their properties, they're going to pay the what it's the value of the property then, so they'll be paying it anyway. So included, including the sewer system, sewer services, the new values for their properties. My goal will be how can I today help those who will have difficult times in coming up with the cost to
right, and that's been our goal from day one is to try to reduce the monthly cost of this project because certainly we know there's a lot of people that are on fixed incomes, so helping them with a lower monthly cost is what our goal has been.
I probably continue this during our meetings to have a clarification as what it is. I don't want to bring it in a form of an argument, but I need a little more understanding.
And I think what we're looking for is an assurance that we're not going to stop at this point seeking the means by which we can reduce these costs in any way, shape, or form. So,
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one way of reducing those monthly costs is to give people the economic incentive to use less water. So when we have a fee structure that's based on actual usage, then the consumer has an opportunity to affect what that charge is. And I appreciate the fact, and I think it's very appropriate, that we tie our sewer fees to consumption. Many communities don't do that. They just have a flat rate. And so, and it's more work when you measure consumption and come up with a sewer rate that's actually a function of the water usage. So I'm glad we're going down that path. And as I mentioned, again, I think having the variable rate where consumers can actually affect what their bill is also appropriate, and we're doing that. And the other thing, the 50 gallons per capita per day, which averages 1,500 gallons per month of indoor use, is very generous, and that's what these calculations are based on, and it's quite easy for people to get that down to 30 to 35 gallons per day comfortably, and so that would further allow a reduction over what you see here. So I think we're on the right path with this, and I'm going to support it.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to run through a couple of questions, respond to a couple of comments relative here. I may need Mr. Ogren here in the early going, but in Section 2 of the ordinance, which starts at the bottom of our staff report A15, we go to this that there's a requirement to connect within 90 days of being notified, and I understand that it's the intention of the Public Works Department to phase these notifications. Is that correct? So we're not trying to connect 5,000 people.
That certainly would be true. Bob Ogren, Public Works Director, we would intend on phasing notifications. You know, the initial is to grab the connections that have a lot of flows, multifamily, mobile home parks, so that our initial flows are as much as they can. But that section of the ordinance also already recognizes that, you know, an equity issue may exist in terms of who connects quickly and who takes a little bit longer to connect. And so for those who do connect within the 90-day period, if there's an equity issue because they're paying too soon, if the ordinance provides, you know, the county with the ability to defer collection of service charges on those who do connect early, again, recognizing that just because they connect early, they shouldn't be penalized, that the goal would be to get everybody to be paying service charges about the same time.
So that's the waiver that's at the bottom, actually, of Section 3, the ability to waive the service charges at the bottom of Section
correct.
3. So let me go back to the question of 90 days. Would you have any problem if we extended that to 180 days?
No. I think I'd start getting concerned if it got extended beyond 180 days. The practical effect is we would probably start, you know, noticing some people a little bit quicker, again, to try to work out a phase connection as best as possible when the day comes. But, you know, I don't have a problem with 180 days either.
Okay. And then at the bottom of Section 2, which is actually at the top of the next page, It indicates the connection must be accomplished by the owner in accordance with the rules and regulations established by the county. Could those rules and regulations account for a possibility of flexibility on that time frame if certain exceptional circumstances are encountered?
I'm going to ask for county council to help a little bit on this. I don't generally believe that a resolution that adopts rules and regulations can sort of be more flexible than the construct of an ordinance. If your board wanted to provide some sort of authority, you know, I can envision two. One is that you authorize the public works director to extend that period of time for reasons such as the lack of available resources to do all the connections. The other option, because individuals doing connections are going to be looking at permitting issues, you could also, in theory, I guess, delegate that potential extension of authority to your director of planning and building. So I think you have both of those options as well.
I would think, too, that it's going to be dependent upon, how quickly they can tie in is going to be dependent upon the time of year as well.
Yeah.
If we're in a wet season, you're not going to get as much.
Right.
And I guess the concern that I have with the way that's written is there's nothing that suggests that there is flexibility or a phase suggestion to do this. And I'd feel more comfortable if there was something in there. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. So I'm going to answer the first question I had. The second one, upon connection, is there going to be a requirement for a payment?
There's not for all of the developed properties, there's not a connection fee. It still begs the question of what is going to be the method of collecting for undeveloped properties when we get to that point. If an assessment is approved, then they'll have no connection fees, or alternatively, those properties could be subject to connection fees.
But nobody has to come up front with certain...
No, their big cost is their on-lot cost for abandoning their septic tank and for doing the connection from the house out to the street. That's their cost.
That's a concern, too, with those with a less fortunate, that they have to come up with a chunk of money. I'm thinking of those who live on a flat income, Social Security, right. By the time they pay their meals and prescription drugs, where is that money going to come from?
And then that's where Will had referenced that, I believe it's State Water Board, not USDA, but State Water Board is indicating the ability to provide loan funds for those on-clock costs as well.
But is it in the process?
Yeah, it's in the process, but the State Water Board doesn't want to go any further with the process until we get through the steps of rates and charges.
Thanks.
Sorry, Mr. Gibson. Okay. What I would propose to colleagues is to amend Section 2 based on what I've heard from Mr. Ogren. One of them would be to start within 180 days of being notified. And I'll phrase this in a motion, but just to give you the idea of where I'm going, would be to extend the 90 to 180 in the start of Section 2, and then add a sentence, second sentence of Section 2, which would be that the Director of Public Works may extend the connection deadline in individual cases of extraordinary circumstances. And so could there be included in there, at the beginning of that 180-day time frame, a phased process by which this would be addressed?
Well, I think the phasing is as indicated by Public Works, that they're not going to send 5,000 notices out on a single day.
I understand that, but I think the difficulty comes from the public standpoint when they see something in writing like this that's what's going to be done and that's
right.
where it's going to be held. So if there's some type of flexibility there that can be indicated, I think that would be...
Chairman Meechan, Pablo Ogren, what I would maybe offer there is in the language on top of my page too, but essentially it's right before Section 3, where it says the connection must be accomplished by the owner in accordance with rules and regulations established by the county, including not, maybe a sentence is those rules and regulations shall incorporate a phased connection plan.
Okay, I'm good with
that.
Because
then when we bring back the rules and regulations, we'll have that plan addressed in there.
Okay. So we'll get that all... get that all read in properly when we get there. If there's specific language that either Public Works or County Council wants to include, be happy to take that. Moving along again, Mr. Ogren just answered question that I was going to comment on. There was some question about why we aren't dealing with the specifics of the SRF, you know, that maybe we have it backwards, that we should hold off on the rates and charges, but no, in fact, we have to do the rates and charges to both finalize the USDA and to get further with the SRF. Moving down, there was some comment that individual wanted a cap on the rates of charges, and I think it's clear that this does provide a cap, that any adjustment upward on rates and charges needs to be subjected to a process under Prop 218. There was a question or a comment by, or a question really by Ms. Cooper about whether variable O&M and replacement costs is the same as a general benefit. My understanding of that is that those are two different, entirely different concepts. General benefit from the property tax assessment, the variable O&M is a cost that we're allocating to rates and charges. Is there any comment we need further on that?
Yeah, you're correct. There is no general and special benefit are terms used when establishing an assessment. They don't pertain to rates and charges, and the variable O&M does not include any of the general benefits that were involved in the rates and charges process.
Okay.
I mean, excuse me, the assessment process.
Okay. The other item, and I believe it's another typo that I believe Ms. Watson pointed out in Section 5, page A17, the last clause in the last sentence about notifying duty, the whole sentence reads, it's also the duty of the owner to inform the county promptly of all circumstances and of any change, instead of and should be changed to any change in any circumstances that will affect. So with that one typo, I would go ahead and offer a motion to, number one, introduce the attached ordinance for item A1 as amended by the corrections read into the record by Mr. Clemens in the start, the correction to Section 5 that I just noticed, or just read into the record here, with the change in Section 2 that changes within 90 days to within 180 days to add, to insert a new second sentence that reads, the Director of Public Works may extend the connection deadline in individual cases of extraordinary circumstances, and to add a final sentence to Section 2 that indicates, that reads, these rules and regulations will include a phased connection plan. The motion continues then to schedule a public hearing for December 14th and to consider the approval of the ordinance, and to direct the Director of Public Works to mail notice of the public hearing in accordance with Article 13D of the Constitution and Proposition 218 Omnibus Implementation Act, with the noted code section citation.
Just a second. Hold it, please.
Section 3 has a 90-day time.
Mr. Margeson, I've allowed you to come up a number of times. I've allowed you to submit some questions. Allow us to deliberate, and we'll come to conclusion here. Mr. Ogden.
Thank you, Supervisor Meacham. I got the two additions to the language, which were consistent with what I had drafted. The 90-day extension in Section 2 to 100. There's a couple of Supervisor Gibson's portion of his motion that I didn't catch because I was doing my own notes. But you were extending the 90 days in Section 2 to 180 days?
Correct.
And then I do think also that Section 3 has a reference to 90 days.
So that
that would also be, I think, appropriately amended to be 180 days.
Okay.
Oh, there are two references in Section 3 to 90 days.
Okay. And so I would...
can the motion be that whatever and there's a reference to
the 90 days in section 2 and section 3 would become 180 days. That's right. That will be part of my motion, yes.
And I need to ask County Council, are we okay with the changes that are being suggested?
Yes,
here?
You can amend the ordinance at the time of introduction.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Ogren.
And do
you have other?
That's just clarifying my understanding of the motion.
Mr. Gibson?
I was wondering if I had a second.
Oh. I second.
Oh, thanks, sir.
I have a motion by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Patterson, to introduce the attached ordinance with the corrections, and then schedule public hearing for December 14th, and direct Public Works to mail out the notices of the public hearing. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Sajian?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Okay, we're going to move into, now I have a number of requests for public comment.
I'm just hoping that this will open up more doors for us to bring some good news as to what others...
Absolutely. And if I, if the chair would indulge me briefly, again, informational meeting on this. Doors open at 6 on December 2nd, Los Osos Middle School. I also will be holding my office hours in Los Osos at Sea Pines Golf Course, 4 o'clock until at least 5 o'clock this coming Thursday, the 28th. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, that wraps up consent. And we're going to try the best we can. We are scheduled to be someplace at 12 o'clock, so I'm not sure how we're going to... What? I can't understand what you're saying. Let's go to public comment real quickly if we can. And if we can we be brief? We need to get out of here if at all possible. Is Julie here? Julie Rodewald? No? Okay. Let's go to Piper Riley and then Julie Tacker.
Good afternoon, I'm Piper Riley from Los Osos, and I gotta admit that I'm a little incensed, so I'll try to be as polite as possible. When Supervisor Hill ran for his seat, he gave the public the impression that he would be a good environmental steward. He ran on the coattails of other environmentalists, and a lot of people from Los Osos helped. As soon as you were elected, you forgot us. But what we have not forgotten is that your district, which is a partial liquefaction zone just like Los Osos, after the last earthquake, your gravity system crumbled and has been in repair for the last 20 years, and now your conventional treatment facility is also failing, and that's being covered up, and that's fraud. Supervisor Sazian, you have publicly proclaimed that you are for the common man, yet your voting record really does not show that. For the last 10 years at the Coastal Commission, you've been pro-developer and pushing through this MWH system the entire time, supporting District 2 supervisors in this endeavor, even though one of them wiped out their government hard drive in order to eliminate the Los Osos information. When we tried to find answers in other places regarding MWH's backdooring of contracts and monstrous cost overruns, these documents also disappeared. The only person who can provide these answers is the district attorney, and he refuses to. That is also fraud. Supervisor Patterson, you were once a strong environmentalist with an independent voting record, but then when you lost Santa Margarita Ranch, it seemed that you're just blindly following Supervisor Gibson, and that is really, really sad. And then we have our District 2 Supervisor, Mr. Gibson, who has ardently pushed through the old MWH project, which we stopped in 2002. You created your own private marketing brochure full of lies to sway businesses and private individuals to believe in this highly overpriced and impactive project. This is fraud. And fraud was found to be a serious issue with the last LOWWP in 2005, as well as in New Orleans and Cape Coral, where the damage done by MWH made many in Florida lose their homes and businesses, and this was before the economy crashed. I have more to say, but I'd like to comment on some of the issues that came up before. If you would pick a less expensive system, we would not be worrying about all these financing. There needs to be competition. This is the United States. The financing, which is good to go for 40 to 50 years, exceeds the lifespan of a gravity system. So we're going to be paying for repairs. I think the conservation is a wonderful idea, but it does not jive with a gravity system. There are so many areas that need to be addressed. I'll see you next Tuesday. Thank you.
Julie Tacker, followed by Linda Ann, please.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker. I first want to say to the board that I apologize to you for Mr. Gibson's apology to you. These are your constituents, too. And if I had a representative, my representative would be shouting for my community. My representative would not yield to our public works staff to be negotiating nearly $200 million worth of loans. These are loans, not grants. Mr. Giudotti says that he's had discussions with the USDA and he's talked to them. Mr. Gibson, Mr. Ogren, discussions, talk to, conversations with. Mr. Clemens, talk to, conversations, discussions. I've read the written record that was provided to me. Now, if there's something else out there, then it wasn't given to me. But whatever, I work in a hospital. Document, document, document. If it's not written down, it didn't happen. The same in government. If these representatives were working for our community, there'd be a written record. There'd be negotiations that we could all read and understand. I still don't have an answer for, in the written record, for where design build went. I don't have a written answer for why our USDA loan is now not $64 million, it's $83 million with fractional grants thrown at it. The written record doesn't show 2,900 jobs coming to or out of our project. The written record, it's not being posted on our website that was promised through transparency. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we have to continue to battle with your public works staff. That's really who. I'm sorry that my community is trying to make a living. They don't know what's happening down here. They don't know what's coming in the waves and waves of increases to their water rates, and that their sewer rate is not going to top out at $25,000 as promised in 2007 by that 218.
Linda Ann, please follow by Eric Greening.
Good morning. My name is Linda Ann. I have a Bachelor of Science and have tutored cell biology, anatomy, and physiology about 35 years ago. I come again to you with an urgent matter that has threatened the peace and public health of other California communities. Smart meters. As I stated last week, Hawaii and 18 California communities, including San Francisco County and city, don't want them and have moratoriums or laws banning them. As you know, smart meters are part of a wireless network that PG&E has been installing on homes, businesses, telephone poles, streetlights, etc., all over numerous communities, despite huge public outcry. Besides fires, interference with electronic equipment, they have been making many people sick. Now they are doing the same thing here without concern for the public good. Smart meters emit huge pulses of microwaves, higher levels than PG&E claims. The bioeffects of microwave radiation are well documented in thousands and thousands of peer-reviewed studies per Ole Johansson, a leading world authority in the field of radiation and health effects. Even if smart meters were to emit intensities at a fraction of the FCC standard, like PG&E say they do, there's a host of studies detailing evidence of harm. German doctors filed the Freiberger appeal in October 2002, detailing their observations of dramatic rises in severe and chronic diseases that got better when microwave radiation was reduced. Children, the elderly, pregnant women, and the sick are especially at risk. The Soviets found overexposed radiation workers permanently disabled with radio wave sickness. We call it electrohypersensitivity. Overexposure to microwaves lends itself to a growing population of similarly disabled people. I know several of them. Their life is terrible. Smart meters have already caused a lot of health problems, and there is a huge public outcry. After smart meter installation, they experienced a variety of symptoms. They got better when away from smart meter communities. Some of them describe their lives now as a living hell. Pearl Jelter, MD, reports after getting a smart meter, a two-year-old can't sleep at night. He screams inconsolably for hours. When his mother takes him to a remote area, the child sleeps well every night. A 45-year-old woman with MS, stable for years, gets a smart meter and goes downhill rapidly. A 10-year-old with high-functioning autism gets a smart meter, deteriorates quickly. Roy Ockton, MD, writes in a letter to the utility company regarding the new radio broadcasting meters. Years of research also reveal a broad range of symptoms and diseases. He says vigorous research done over a period of several decades shows chronic exposure causes health damage to people who note no immediate symptoms. This proliferation of wireless technologies has given rise to health problems that cannot be successfully treated medically, as medicine cannot remove the underlying cause, exposure to radiation. We don't want this.
Thank you, Ms. Ann. Thank you. Mr. Greening, followed by Al Barrow, please.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and just as a follow-up to this, I think this is going to continue to be discussed in the only real format is a public hearing. I thought I saw Mr. Scholes here from PG&E earlier this morning, and perhaps he was going to be presenting the PG&E side of the story, but obviously the place for the sides of the story to be presented and for your board to decide whether to take the kind of action that has happened in some other jurisdictions would be an agendized public hearing. Since there is an aggressive schedule to begin installing these things almost immediately, the time for such a public hearing is sooner rather than later. And I will also say, with something that's new and just starting, certainly opponents can be accused of only having anecdotal and episodic data. For something new, that is all you have, but it points to something, and so I think all sides definitely need to be heard respectfully on this matter. A couple of other things. I notice some of our cattle raising folks are here and I guess ready to take you to lunch. I've noticed that the cattle are beginning to have fresh salad for lunch now. This could be good news or bad news, because often when you get the first grass early in the season, it's hard to keep it going. The rain doesn't necessarily fall consistently. But there's another side to what's happening, and that is the first flush, which I don't know if we're even there yet. I still see a lot of the oil and goopy stuff in the pavement, in where the puddles were and so on. I'm not sure how much of it has moved toward the creeks. But my question is it being measured this year? Is the water being tested this year? Can we have an agendized hearing in the near future and on a recurring annual basis, a first flush report? How are we doing? Are we protecting our creeks and the ocean from that phenomenon? And then my final question relates to the land use and circulation element / rural area plan. There was a period of about a year that started about a year ago during which private applications could kind of ride the train that was traveling in terms of the general plan amendments. And I'm just wondering, has that train reached its destination? I have not heard a firm announcement that that door is closed, but I would suspect that it is. I would hope that could be clarified in the community. Obviously, we don't want to encourage upzoning and proliferation of development in the very area where we're saying we don't want it, but that door has been open for about a year. Is it closed? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, and I see Julie Rodewald has come back. Up next, please.
Thank you, sir. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and I would like to just briefly touch on the fact that your sewer project is going to disenfranchise a lot of low-income people. We're talking over $200 a month in that rates of charges you just passed. I mean, it's pretty hefty. And, you know, I just see people living on low income. The gentleman from the staff said, oh, we're trying to keep the rates low. The rates aren't low. The rates are really high. They're, in fact, 12 times higher than the national average. Okay? So you really haven't got an affordable project before you in any shape or form to justify this project, because you save by spreading out the cost over 40 years. It's a fallacy. It's going to gentrify our community. It's going to throw people out of their housing. people in Section 8 can't qualify under those income rules. They will not be able to stay in their homes, in their housing. The rental market has dropped their rates by 20% across the board to accommodate the public, rental people, because they can't afford it. And I got that straight from three big property management companies that work in Los Osos. What are those property owners going to do if they can't find tenants? They can't compete. That has never been part of the consideration here. If you mind showing my next, I'd like to talk about the Safe Parking Lot program, and I'm asking you all to support this program officially. This is one that's successful in Santa Barbara. We have school-aged children that are homeless now living in vehicles all over the streets of the county. They need a chance for an education. They need a chance. This gives them at least a chance to get services, a safe place to park at night until we can find housing for them. Wouldn't you find it in your hearts to support this program? I asked Mr. Patterson about the warming shelters, or I mentioned at the Homeless Oversight Committee that I was a concern. He said that we have them, and I sent an email yesterday asking you where they are. Do they have them for North County, South County? Do they have them for Central County? And do they have them from the coastal area like Los Osos and Moore Bay, Cayucas? So those are questions that are not answered yet. But as you can see, this particular project has porta-potties and it has water, has management, and we keep records. So I would ask you, please, at some point, make a statement that this board supports safe parking.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
Thank you.
Gwen Taylor, I'm sorry, Julie Rodewald, and followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning, Julie Rodewald, Karen McCurk Recorder. I apologize for not being here if you called my name earlier. I just wanted to remind voters that today is the last day for us to receive an application to mail a ballot for next Tuesday's election. After today, they can still get a ballot, but they must appear personally in our office. So if somebody has an application, they're hearing this right now, they can fax that application to us today at 805-781-1111. I also want to remind voters that we will be open this Saturday from 9 to 1 to make it convenient for them to get a ballot voted or just drop off the ballot that they've already been issued. We've issued over 88,000 ballots, and we have almost 30,000 of those back. So I want to remind the almost 60,000 voters that haven't yet turned in their ballots to turn those in, and to the rest of the 75,000 or so registered voters, make sure you either get a vote-by-mail ballot or turn up to vote at the polls next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. 1 week to go. Gwen Taylor, followed by Jeff Edwards, please.
Good afternoon again. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. In the October 22nd Telegram Tribune, the following article was printed. California is getting $274 million in federal grants meant to pay for upgrades to drinking water and sewer systems. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced this on Wednesday. Are we applying for shovel-ready monies that are supposedly what was promoted early on in this sewer project? This is the shovel-ready funding that should be applied for now. How many loans do you expect the community of Los Osos, private citizens, in a very small area, the prohibition zone, to take out? Loans cost money. Many people right now are existing on loans, reverse loans. These people are not going to have the money that you profess are going to be needed for this sewer project. How many loans do you, as gentlemen sitting on this board, think that you could pay off? I doubt that the number that you are professing these people are going to have to get for this sewer project, you would be able to pay off. The monies that were originally assessed to the property owners in the Prohibition Zone was $225 a year. Most of us have received our tax bills. It's on there. That's just one more bill that we have to pay off. How many more bills do you perceive that a small community in a prohibition zone are going to be able to pay off? Start adding up.
Edwards, followed by, I guess it's Bo Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. In the interest of time, I'll trail my remarks till next week.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate that. Mr. Cooper, followed by Mr. Margetson.
Bo Cooper. I just want everybody to know that was at home and can't see that there's a sheriff's deputy in the back. He's watching during the last section when we're talking about Los Osos. He's been in the room since the end of, toward the end of the last session. The implication is, look, we're a violent bunch. We have not done any violence. We are a passionate bunch. Why am I passionate? Because I'm going to lose my home. I will not be able to afford to live in my house with the increase, $200 that you guys talk about, plus $50 at least on lot costs, plus whatever overruns. During the last time that the LOCSD tried to start the project, it was 40-45% cost overruns from what they expected originally. So it's going way over $350 is a reasonable thing to expect. I simply cannot afford it. I cannot afford this. Go back to my court, you need to do that. I can't afford to stay. I can't afford to move. I don't know what to do. Not for myself, but for my wife. I have obligations to my wife. If I was to die or leave, I still need to protect her. You guys not allow me to protect her. I have an issue of democracy. You guys are not your representatives. You're supposed to represent us, the people. You're not doing that. You're putting me in danger. You're putting 4,000 or 5,000 people, seniors, disabled, in danger of death, in danger of this displacement. It's just so wrong. The county is continuously told untruths. The biased survey. The TAC would say, just on and on, just so many things. Bait and switch around the 218, oh, now it's rates and charges. Just on and on and on and on. They're bad members. Our good people keep telling you that it doesn't seem to have an effect. We're not crazy people. We're really thoughtful people, both try to defend our homes and defend each other. Even those who can afford it, I know, are fighting because it's right, because you're trying to help you see that what you're doing isn't the right thing to do. I beg you to consider. I understand Bruce has his vested interest, his ego, and his career, whatever's going on, whatever the cause, doesn't matter. But you guys are mature adults, and you're allowing a bad process to go forward. It's just so important that you really consider it. Look into your hearts. Consider the evidence. If you consider the evidence, we may disagree about some facts, but there's some basics about affordability, about environmental sustainability. That there was no real doubt about it. Don't be bullied by Bruce. And finally, Bruce, never apologize for me. Never apologize for me. The reason we speak up sometimes is they don't give and take, and we just desperately demand a voice, and we're just not getting it. Thank you.
For Margetson, that's followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Margetson, I want to echo what Bo said. Mr. Gibson doesn't need to apologize for me either. You've had how many afternoons in the last 10 sessions that you've had nothing on the schedule? But you've had open afternoons. Mr. Gibson should apologize to the community of Los Osos for the way this was introduced, for something people are going to have to pay for the rest of their lives. I was talking to Don Bearden during the break. He said when our recent water rate increase in Los Osos was introduced, if it had been introduced on consent calendar with the premise that, oh, we're going to inform you about it at the next meeting, there would have been 200 people at the community center at the next meeting, up in arms that they hadn't been given an advance warning. and then you hide it amongst the holiday celebrations, holiday plannings. Workshop was supposed to be first part of November. Now it's December 2nd. Happens to be the date also of the Los Osos CSD board meeting that night. Scheduled meeting. How convenient. So where do people go? Find out how they're going to have to pay $90 and up in order to cover your O&M and undeveloped lot costs for the next whatever. You talk about affordability. Mr. Sajjan, you're constantly concerned about more loans, more grants. This project staff has been entrusted with bringing the payment down. And they get credit for it all the time. The cost hasn't come down. All they've done is stretch the payment out. It's like when car companies couldn't sell cars years ago, certain brands. Oh, we won't give you 60-month financing. We'll get you in at 84-month financing. Entice people to buy the Yugo, to buy the off-brand cars. And I know you don't like the outbursts from the audience. And I know it sucks when the audience is correct. But the outburst today was correct. The outburst we tried to give you about not using the word valley when it was before you, before it went to the Coastal Commission, triggered an appeal from the Coastal Commission, we tried to tell you from the audience. We tried to tell you about the water conservation program. Don't use the word develop, use the word implement. That came from the audience. I know it sucks when the audience is right, but if you had a better system for back
Thank
and
you,
forth,
Mr. Margeson.
You may get further.
Lindy Owen, followed by Ben DeFada.
Lindy Owen again. So much talk about affordability. Unfortunately, it's this community of Los Osos that talks about affordability, and Pablo Ogren talks about how he can get more loans and more outside money to pay for a project that is escalating just as we told you it would escalate. It's a project that's designed to put raw sewage in our drinking supply in about a third of our town. We're in an earthquake area, high risk. Those pipes are going to shift. The raw sewage will be in our drinking supply, making it a little more difficult to want to drink it. You pick the most expensive project, the most expensive technology, technology that is being abandoned by the EPA and anybody that in their right mind building in areas with sand. We're on a sand dune. We have shifting soils. We had a much better project, and you allow Paul Ogden to remove it. The step design keeps your septic tank. It collects your effluent that would have gone into a leach field. It pipes it out in 4 foot under small pipe, and they're very flexible. They survive earthquakes. You had a good project 3.5 years ago, $8 million ago. How have you let this go to the degree that it's gotten today? Montgomery Watson Harza got paid $450 to be involved in the EIR and working under Carollo. They don't get to bid for the project. County Council, could you please address that since you seem to wish to ignore Ms. Lisa Schicker's complaints about that very bid rigging coming from Montgomery Watson Harza, known for fraud and bid rigging throughout our country now. In Iraq, they did the same thing. I don't want that kind of sewer, and I don't want your funding solutions, which are to go borrow more money on my back. And I don't want to see this project escalating the way it's escalating. If that project, if this ridiculous project does go through and we don't stop you, we're talking about a potential $80 million extra, more rates and charges. Rate and charges to death? Is that what you were hired for? Is that taking care of your constituents? Mr. Gibson, please. This is time to come straight. Get us back to what we were supposed to be doing, which was a fair decision about an alternative.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada and Lacey Cooper.
Good afternoon, Chairs, Board. Ben DeFada, all five of you should heed the words that Supervisor Ashadia said in his statement for of candidate for State Assembly in the sample ballot. In short, he said he will work to pass reforms by big-spending liberal politicians by imposing strict cap on spending to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. That's a plug for you, sir. I'm sure you all at one time or another said that to other voters in order to get their vote, you said the same words. Good words for sure, but other than Chairman Meacham, you other four have a dismal record that shows the opposite. By your abusing your powers when you want to build an unaffordable sewer project. Assemblyman Blakesley figured $2 million to get the ball rolling to building the sewer project. And here we are at $8 million and 3 years later, maybe four, lost track of time. Some of you went to Washington, D.C. twice telling the people with the money he and Auburn have a shovel to get the money that he and Auburn have a shovel-ready project. Well, 3 years later and $8 million, where is that project? Was it the old, expensive, flawed gravity project? Where is it? He picked a 643-acre Tunini farm. I'm going to have to cut it short. Spray the water away. And put in the old gravity collection system. It's still on his plate. And also the sludge maker, Energy Hog Biolock treatment is still there. Broderson is still useless. Can't move the creek, can't cross the creek. What kind of thinking is that from these two in the private industry? He would be thrown out on his ears before their desks were cleaned out. Doesn't that even bother you, other four supervisors? Looks like when you can't make it in private industry, there is a reason for working for government. What other profession can you rip off the taxpayer, say, I'm doing it for you? Mr. Chairman, we have enough evidence collected to help you start an investigation of the wrongdoings of this county, waste, fraud, and abuse. We have over 700 rentals in Los Angeles with over 2,000 people who can't barely pay the rent. If these 700 rentals were to have their rents increase at least $3,600 a year or more, plus the homeowners that can hardly pay their mortgage payments, then how in the world is another $3,600... Well, what's to become of them? It is estimated that at least one-third to one-half will have to move out of Los Angeles, all caused by you five, plus that doggone Auburn. Mr. Gibson's welfare fund to help pay for those unfortunate souls will never be enough to make a dent. Stop spending other people's money they don't have.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada.
Thank you, sir.
Lacey Cooper, please. And that's my final request.
I'm just, as general comments, some clarifications on the last issue. The reason, I'm going to talk about the process briefly. The process was rushed through because they had to pass the ordinance today, and we knew it would because they have to have their mail-outs postmarked by October 30th because then they have 45 days to the drop-dead date. Is December 14th, and Mr. Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, had to make that date. And not much of a process because we knew that you would have to pass it today. The other thing is, the SRF loan requires the rates and charges because of the undeveloped property cost of $27 million. Our O&M, our service charges are not covered by debt. It's our money that we pay. So it's because we're paying for the undeveloped lots. There could have been, as Papa Ogre stated,
we went through this the prior.
But we didn't have enough time. Did you notice that?
I'm sorry, but this is
the process.
This is a public comment for something that is not on the agenda. So if you could please get to that.
Okay, it's not the LOP. It's $40,000 per lot. It's becoming $40,000 per lot, and this isn't part of the ordinance that we are a disadvantaged community. Because the project is so expensive. It's up to 6%. EPA is 2%, so we're a disadvantaged community. You could ask the SRF to get a better loan because of that. The only person that can afford the EPA estimate of 2% is Pablo Ogren because he makes $162,000 a year, and that's how much you'd have to make to meet the EPA requirements for affordability. The number one issue on the survey that people turned in that they always tout was affordability. You're ignoring a $50 million less project. That's approximately $50 a month less. And it's wrong. I think that's all I have to say, except this project isn't even designed, so you don't have to go through with it. And I wish you would save, if you're just going to pile the old project on us, why didn't you save us $8 million and do it 3 years ago?
That concludes our public comment. I'm going to change the agenda a little bit, but before we go, I got a couple comments I'd like to make. I continue to hear the issue of bid rigging, fraud, a lot of these comments. If you feel that way, there's an organization called the Grand Jury. And from what I understand, Mr. Jensen, you reviewed how many pages of documentation?
There were 1,400 pages submitted by Ms. Schicker. And it's all posted online together with my analysis.
So if there's other things that you feel that are specific, I'd suggest you talk to the grand jury and initiate another investigation of some sort. If there's something wrong, I'd welcome to see it. But to date, I haven't seen it. Thank you. I'm going to ask at this point we introduce the Cattleman of the Year. And before I go to there, can we do the others after lunch?
Yes, Jim Grant, County Administrator. I've scheduled that for after lunch. We'll do,
along with
closed
session.
If you'd like to do closed session right after lunch, we could do that, followed by the two presentations.
I'd like to do that if we can. And okay. With that, let's hear about the Cattleman of the Year.
Thank you, Bill. The San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association has selected Mr. Ray Allen as their 2010 Cattleman of the Year. Ray was born and raised in Pocatello, Idaho, growing up on his family's ranch where they raised cattle, grain, and hay. While attending Idaho State College, the Korean War started, and Ray joined the Air Force to serve his country as an airborne radar technician. After the war, Ray worked on several ranches. In 1957, he began working on the Jackson family Silver Creek Ranch, starting colts for their thoroughbred horse breeding and racing ranch in Tuscarora, Nevada, and Santa Barbara County. In 1970, he was named the general manager of the Silver Creek Ranch, overseeing their horses in Nevada, California, Kentucky, and as well as on all major racetracks in California. Ray became general manager of the Jackson family California agricultural operation in 1980. This included the Silver Creek horses, home ranch, land, and orchards at Rancho San Carlos in Montecito, California, and the land and cattle of their Alisal Ranch in Solvay. After retirement, in 1993, Ray and his wife moved to the east side of Paso Robles, where they raised horses and cattle. Now, Ray is retired. He is busier than ever. He has worked full-time helping his neighbor and good friend, John Lacey, work cattle, taking care of horses, baling hay, and whatever other help is needed. Ray was a very active member of the Santa Barbara County Cattlemen's Association, and now San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's keeps him extremely busy, primarily working at the water issues at the local and state level. And he serves as our chair of the Water Environmental Committee. He also is our ag representative to several advisory committees, such as Central Coast Ag Waiver Coalition, Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, and others. Ray attends countless meetings and representing our local association. He serves as a Natural Resources Committee for the California Cattlemen's Association. He is a member of San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau, the Thoroughbred Club of America, California Thoroughbred Breeders Association, America Quarter Horse Association, and is a Rancho Vistadori. Ray and Mike were married in 1955 and have three children, Vicki Allen Penwell, Terry Allen Woods, Craig R. Allen. In addition, they have seven grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. The San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association would like to recognize Ray's many accomplishments, dedication, and commitment to the ever-changing industry and contribution to his committee. Congratulations, Ray. Thank you for all your hard work.
And could I get your name for the record? Aaron, could I get your name for the record, please?
My name's Aaron Lazanoff. I'm San
Thank
Luis
you.
Obispo.
Ray, would you like to say a few words? Sing us a song? Anything at all there, Chief.
Ride the bull.
Gentlemen, that's an honor that I had no idea was coming, and the list of people who have received this recognition really makes me feel humble to be on that list, and it's just a case of trying to make a little commitment and return something to the community that has given me and my family our livelihood, and I'm just very humbled to have it.
I think it's well deserved, sir, and honored to know you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I have no request to speak for the closed session items. We are going to adjourn to the Madonna Inn and join you for lunch, and then we will return to closed session and then back to the afternoon session. Thank you.